The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of the Carl Jackson Podcast. I got a lot in store for you today. The U.S. Soccer Federation agrees to pay men's and women's teams equally. We'll talk about that. Joe Biden finally invokes the Defense Production Act to address the baby formula shortage. And also, Ann Coulter wrote a fabulous column on Breitbart. We'll get into that. She talks about all the nutcases who actually believe in replacement theory. And guess what? They're not on the right. All this and more coming up on the Carl Jackson Podcast.
Redeemed, rehabilitated, and real entertaining. This is the Carl Jackson Podcast.
Before I get into the headlines and the major topic of today, let me talk to you about 2,000 Mules. You've known it in your gut. Something just wasn't right about the 2020 election. Well, you're right. And here's the proof you've been waiting for. In Dinesh D'Souza's explosive new documentary, 2,000 Mules, executive produced by the Salem Media Group, you'll see jaw-dropping evidence of exactly how the Democrats pulled off the biggest heist in American history. Drawing on meticulous research from the election integrity group True the Vote, 2,000 Mules uses both cell phone geo-tracking data and video evidence to uncover a massive network of illegal ballot trafficking in all five key swing states, enough election fraud to sway the outcome of the 2020 election. Thousands across the country attended the nationwide theatrical release. Now, you can watch it from the comfort of your own home. Watch on any device with a web browser. You can gather your friends, family, skeptics even, but don't miss it. Go to SalemNow.com to watch it today. See the movie that President Donald Trump calls a real blockbuster. Go to SalemNow.com to watch today. That's SalemNow.com, executive produced by the Salem Media Group. All right. Again, welcome to today's edition of the Carl Jackson Podcast. So let's get into this. First, I want to talk about this issue regarding soccer, women's soccer being paid equally as men are being paid. I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of soccer. I do enjoy watching it thoroughly in the U.S. Olympics. Other than that, I don't watch it, but I like it in the U.S. Olympics because I like watching the U.S. Crush other teams, although they haven't been as great. I haven't watched them since the U.S. soccer team has gone woke with this, Megan Rapinoe or whatever her name is. But I used to love watching them. All right, having said all that, let me get back to the issue at hand. So, hat tip Breitbart, the U.S. soccer agrees to pay men's and women's teams equally. Here's the summary. The U.S. Soccer Federation announced on Wednesday that it has agreed to a deal to pay the players on the U.S. women's national team the same as it pays its players on the U.S. men's national team. This is why I hate professional soccer, other than watching it in the U.S. Olympics or before it went woke. All right. So here's why I don't like it. I feel like it's a socialist game. And I think this has proven my point even further. I don't believe that any game should end with a tie. And I certainly don't believe that women, not because they're women, but I don't believe that they should be getting paid equally as men when they don't make as much money, when they don't bring in as much revenue as men, and we'll get into those details, and they don't have the same viewership as the men soccer team does. But we'll get into that. So the summary goes on. The collective bargaining contract will run through 2028, and it includes, quote, equalization, close quote, of World Cup prize money. This, according to NPR, the contract comes after several years of efforts by the USWNT to force the federation to deliver equal pay, right, to force the federation to deliver equal pay between the two teams. The agreement will also afford women players $22 million in back pay. Unbelievable. Here's a quote from Becky Sauerbrunn, I don't know her, but she must be popular in that field. She says, we hope that this agreement and its historic achievements in not only providing for equal pay, but also in improving the training and playing environment for national team players will similarly serve as a foundation for continued growth on women's soccer in both the U.S. and abroad, she says. The pay scales between the two teams have, quote, identical economic terms, close quote. The Federation reports, which includes equal pay for annual salaries and incentives and tournament play, including the two World Cups. Well, Carl, they're just trying to be fair. They're trying to be equitable. Yeah, they're trying to be equitable. They're not trying to be equal. This is socialism at its finest, and I don't like it invading sports. This is a bunch of nonsense. All right. I feel like this is unfair. I don't want to say just as much, but just like men competing in women's sports is wrong, I feel like rewarding people rewarding people more money that's not based upon merit, I feel like it's equally, not equally wrong, but it's wrong as well. All right. So now here's a quote from U.S. Soccer President Cindy Parlow Cohn, and she says, this is a truly historic moment. And she isn't lying. This is really historic. You don't see people getting overpaid for revenue that they don't bring in often. She goes on to say, these agreements have changed the game forever here in the U.S. and have the potential to change the game around the world, close quote. The deal, however, is way more beneficial, as I'm going to get into the numbers, for women than they are for men. So while the agreement is being called, quote, equal pay, close quote, the deal actually heavily favors the women, according to the column. Women's soccer has far fewer fans, both watching on television and going to the stadiums in person. So the men's soccer team, by the way, has three times the viewership. Here's some examples. The 2019 Women's World Cup reached a record high of 1.12 billion viewers across the world. That is a huge number, no doubt. 1.12 billion viewers across the world. Now, that sounds like a lot, but and then you have to look at what the Men's World Cup earned as far as viewership. When it came to the Men's World Cup, you had 3.572 billion viewers worldwide that earned 6 billion in profits. All right. So 6 billion in profits for the men. They had 3.572 billion viewers. The ladies had 1.12 billion viewers, yet they're going to be paid equally, even though three times fewer the amount of people watch. Now, let me give you some monetary disparity between the two sports. So the 2000 Men's World Cup earned $4 billion in revenue. Unbelievable. So 2010 Men's World Cup, $4 billion in revenue. So you must be thinking the ladies have to be close. They got to be in the 1 billion range or something like that. No, the Women's World Cup that year earned 73 million. 4 billion, 73 million. Okay. But the ladies want equal pay. 4 billion, 73 million. I have nothing against women wanting to make more money, but this should be based upon merit. If you're one of these feminists and you cry about equal rights all the time, you whine about equal rights, and listen, I want equal rights for you. That should be relevant in pay as well. I'm sorry, you have three times fewer the viewership. You don't make anywhere near the same amount of money, not even in the same vicinity. You're talking about $73 million compared to $4 billion. That's not even the same atmosphere. That is crazy. So obviously, the men's soccer team reaches far more viewers, makes far more money. But no worries, since it's a socialist game, the women, it's not meritocracy, it's socialism. The women are going to make just as much. I think that's complete and utter nonsense. And this is why I can't stand professional soccer even more today than yesterday. Will I watch it in the future when it comes to the Olympics? If they don't have woke players on the team, admittedly, I will. Anything beyond that, I will not. So just a story that I thought was pretty cool for today. Now, let me give you this story. all these lefties talking about replacement theory, replacement theory, replacement theory, as if it's some theory that Republicans or the right, Christians, fundamentalists have thought up, but it's nothing of the sort. This is from academia. This is from the left itself. Ann Coulter does a fabulous job on Breitbart outlining where this stuff comes from. So she talks about the great replacement theory and how it's taken the media by storm. And it seems that the white racists, obviously we know that shot up the store last week, did in fact target black people. There's no doubt about it. You looked at his crazy 180-page manifesto or outlinings thereof. It was clear. It was evident. He believed in replacement theory. But here's what you need to know and understand. According to Ann Coulter, the great replacement theory is a theory that's only taught in advanced law school seminars. Who's in law school? Bunch of lefties. Of course, there's Republicans and conservatives that are lawyers, but the vast majority are lefties. Let's be honest. It is not something designed for indoctrination of mass audiences, Ann Coulter says. So here's how the New York Times describes the great replacement theory. They say the notion that Western elites, sometimes manipulated by Jews, anti-Semitic there, New York Times, want to, quote, replace and disempower white Americans. And then Ann says, you want a conspiracy theory about a secretive cabal of Jews? Check out the Times series of articles on neoconservatives back in the early 2000s. But now here's some again, the left is constantly arguing and saying that we're the ones that are spreading this hateful replacement theory. When in fact, what the left does once we catch on to them is they blame us for what they do. They just project what they do and pretend as if we're doing it. That's what they do all the time. So it's crazy. Ann says, but then just as every argument about abortion suddenly becomes an argument about contraception, a few paragraphs later, the crackpot theory jumps from a Jewish cabal replacing whites with blacks. And she's speaking of the New York Times, to the idea that Democrats are using immigration for, quote, electoral gains. Really? They're not? Of course they are. We've got an open border. The southern border does not exist. All right. So here's Democrats talking about the great replacement theory as early as 1998. Here's Patrick Reddy. He talks about the 1965 Immigration Reform Act that was promoted by President Kennedy, drafted by Attorney General Robert Kennedy and pushed through the Senate by Ted Kennedy. Actually, that goes all the way back to 1965. You're talking about nearly 60 years. The liberals have been doing this stuff, and now they're trying to blame us for it. So it's pushed through the Senate by Ted Kennedy, resulted in a wave of immigration from the third world that should shift the nation in a more liberal direction, they said, within a generation. It will go down as the Kennedy family's greatest gift to the Democratic Party. And in fact, I think it's working, right? And Coulter jokes, well, sure, if you want to totally overlook skirt chasing and pill popping. Then in 2002, there's a Democrats, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I believe it's Rye Teixeira, T-E-I-X-E-I-R-A. By the way, he is a liberal Democrat, but he's been writing some great columns lately on how the Democrat Party is abandoning their base, and they're basically looking at a shellacking in the midterms. Democrats... Rye Teixeira and John Judas wrote, quote, the emerging Democratic majority, close quote, arguing that demographic changes, mostly by immigration, were putting Democrats on a glide path to an unsuperable majority, they said. After Obama's reelection in 2012, Teixeira crowed in the Atlantic quote, 10 years farther down this road, Obama lost the white vote 10 years farther down this road, close quote. Obama lost the white vote outright, but won the election with the minority vote. African-Americans, 93% to 6. Hispanics, 71% to 27. Asian-Americans, 73 to 26. So a year later, the National Journal's Ron Brownstein, he began touting the coalition of the ascendant. So again, remember, the Obama administration abandoned the white vote. They were practicing the great replacement. Obama was. Now they blame us for it. So that's called projection, folks. Gloating that Democrats didn't need blue collar workers anymore. here's what happened. And he says, woohoo. This is the National Journal's Ron Brownstein. And I'm quoting, coalition of the ascendant, close quote. Gloating that Democrats didn't need blue collar whites anymore. You hear that? All of you middle class white Americans, poor white Americans, you're no longer needed by the Democrat Party. And their reaction, the National Journal's Ron Brownstein and the Democrats, woohoo, they say, and I quote, Obama lost more than 3/5 of non-college whites and whites older than 45. But who cares, he says. He crushed with minorities a combined 80%. So the Democrat Party overwhelmingly abandoned intentionally slow white middle-class workers. That's how Trump was able to scoop them up. And they went for minority voters exclusively almost. He went on to say, adios, Reagan Democrats. All right. So this is the left. Then there was Democratic pollster Stanley Greenberg's his 2019 book, Rest in Peace, GOP. He explains the coming death of the Republican Party as a result of sucking up to Wall Street. Yeah, who's doing that today? Pushing pointless wars, endlessly cutting taxes. No, the GOP's demise would come from the fact that, quote, our country is hurtling towards a new America that is ever more racially and culturally diverse, more immigrant and foreign born, he says. And these were the genteel, non-threatening descriptions, according to Ann Coulter. She cites MSNBC, how they're constantly talking about old white men and celebrating the, quote, browning of America, unquote. There's a group called Battleground Texas that boasts about flipping the deep red state to Democrats simply by getting more Latinos to vote. That isn't working out so well right now, thank God, but that was their mission. There are blogs that are titled The Irrelevant South, quote unquote, the traditional white South, socially and economically conservative, is no longer relevant in national politics, according to this one blog. And then there's MSNBC's Joy Reid, how she tweeted that she was giddy, quote unquote, watching, quote, all the bitter old white guys, close quote, as Ketanji Brown Jackson makes history, quote unquote. Then there was Tom Wise. This happened this week. He's the leading expert on those that believe in replacement theory, or Ann Coulter says leading expert on the crazies who believe in replacement theory is Tim Wise. He's popping up on both MSNBC and CNN, she reports, to psychoanalyze the white racist, quote unquote. He's been quoted, cited, or praised dozens of times in the New York Times. She says this isn't some fringe character, despite appearances. Ann Coulter has a way with words of getting those jokes in. She's great at it. All right. So in 2010, Wise wrote an, quote, open letter to the white right that began like this. Here's a letter from this guy's Tom Wise that's now being popped up on MSNBC and CNN as an expert on replacement theory. He says, for all y'all rich folks, enjoy that champagne or whatever fancy A scotch you drink. And for y'all a bit lower on the economics scale, enjoy your Pabst Blue Ribbon or whatever SE a beer you favor, he says, because your time is limited, real damn limited, he says. Guess why? And then he explains. He says, and I'm quoting, it is math. Wait, isn't math racist? But moving on, because you're on the endangered list. No, I'm sorry, that was Ann Coulter. He says, it is math because you're on the endangered list. And unlike, say, the bald eagle or some exotic species of muskrat, this is again quoting Tim Wise, you're not worth saving, white people. Oh my God. He says in 40 years or so, maybe fewer, there won't be any more white people around who actually remember that leave it to beaver. Wow. It's okay, because in about 40 years, half the country will be black or brown, he says, and there is nothing you can do about it. Nothing, Senor Tancredo, he says. And then he says, we just have to be patient and wait for you to pass into that good night, first politically, and then, well, do you hear it? The sound of your empire dying, the United States being replaced, your nation as you knew it ending permanently, because I do, and the sound of its demise is beautiful, He says, wow, unbelievable. So Michelangelo said, when people show you who they are, believe them. The left is showing us who they are. These are the people that believe in the great replacement theory, and they've been spouting it, now we know, for nearly 60 years. 60 years. Ted Kennedy, the Kennedy brothers, did so. Now, did you guys hear about this Freudian slip that President George W. Bush had? Where is it? Basically, he was talking about, let me just share this real quickly. This is a major Freudian slip. So former President George W. Bush made a revealing gaffe on Wednesday evening when he blamed Russian leader Vladimir Putin for a, quote, wholly unjustified and brutal invasion, a close quote, of Ukraine, while praising Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. But instead of saying Ukraine, he said Iraq. Talk about uncomfortable. Someone tweeted, this is the Freudian slip of the century, and I think he might be right. Anyway, all right, now let me go to this. The last thing that I want to talk about is what's happening with the baby formula shortage. Biden's baby formula shortage. It's no one's fault but Biden and his administration, his team, the entire staff within the Biden administration. Now they're trying to blame the formula company when it was all them had tipped just the news. So Joe Biden on Wednesday invoked the Defense Production Act in an attempt to boost the supply of baby formula. Did you ever think that we would have to invoke the Defense Production Act for baby formula? Seriously. I mean, just stop and think about that. Unbelievable. So Biden acknowledged the crisis 8 months after becoming aware of the problem. So Biden and his administration and his team, Pete Buttigieg, or Pete Booty, I call him Booty because his policy stinks. So get your mind out of the gutter. All right. So these guys have known about it for 8 months, have known this crisis was coming, have known about the shortages, absolutely done nothing. Absolutely done nothing. The column goes on, and invoking the 1950 Act, Biden asked Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra and Agricultural Secretary Thomas Vilsack to, quote, take all appropriate measures available to get additional safe formula into the country immediately, close quote. He couldn't have said that 8 months ago. Maybe he was too busy trying to hide the or memory hold the Afghanistan surrender and retreat. Biden requested the agency heads work with the Department of Defense to, quote, utilize contracted aircraft to accelerate the arrival of infant formula into the United States that meets our government's health and safety standards. The shortage began when Abbott Nutrition issued a voluntary recall in February of powdered formula after several infants fell ill. But by the way, I think they came to the conclusion that there was no real connection. Nonetheless, these people issued a voluntary recall. Representative, this is a Democrat. I want you guys to hear this. Representative Rosa DeLauro, she's a Democrat from Connecticut, as a matter of fact. She said the FDA first became aware of the possible problems with Abbott formula in September of 2021. She pressed the Biden administration in a letter in March to know why the agency did not act sooner, but to no avail, basically. So this is a Democrat, Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat from Connecticut, saying the FDA knew about this. This is why we can't trust these bureaucratic institutions. There's no accountability there. Who do we go to? Who do we go to? This is why these things have to be busted up, in my opinion. But that was a Democrat. This thing is a bigger story than people are letting on. Now, here's what Representative Elise Stefanik had to say about the Biden administration putting out false information, she says, to cover up its own failures on the baby formula crisis that's plaguing the country. And listen, she just had a boy. She has a 9-month-old baby boy. So here's what she had to say. I'm quoting, this should have been caught earlier on. And Republicans, including my office, was sounding the alarm about the crisis back in February when there was an announcement that the Abbott plant in Sturgis, Michigan was shut down. All right. So she explained that she reached out to the FDA, which failed to respond to a congressional office until May. FDA didn't respond for 3 months. 3 months. This is confirmed by the Democrat, Representative Rosa DeLauro. She says, Stefanik does, we now know from the CEO of Abbott that the FDA slow walked their approval to reopening that. close quote. And Stefanik goes on to say, accusing the Biden administration of, quote, putting out false information, trying to cover up their failures to identify where we were going to get supplies. And right, they lie. Look at what they did with Afghanistan. They just lie. She also said they slow walked getting the Sturgis, Michigan facility back online. So they've been aware of this. This is Stefanik. I'm still quoting. They've done everything they could not to talk about this crisis. That's how out of touch they are. They laughed about it. That was the first public sound coming out of this administration, was the newly appointed press secretary was laughing about not knowing who is responsible for baby formula. Unbelievable. This is going to be big. And she's talking about mothers that feel absolute terror when they don't know where they can go to get their babies fed. And listen, not all mothers can breastfeed people. So just know that. All right. And then Stefanik goes on to say it was only because that press conference that Joe Biden had to scramble and that day changed his schedule to set up a call with formula manufacturers to try to show any semblance of competency, which is far out the door for this administration. But there is no plan from the Democrats, she said, adding that she is working on legislation designed to require the FDA to, quote, present the public with a plan, close quote, before shutting down these types of places. Yeah, these people should not have this type of power. They really shouldn't. Congress has ceded far too much power to the executive branch, who has ceded far too much power to these bureaucratic institutions. That must change. All right. Stefanik closes out. She says, I think this is a much larger scandal than people realize. And I think she's right. And I think Democrats are going to pay the price for this. No doubt about it. In my mind, in November, we just have to show up in huge, huge numbers and make sure that our elections are secure. So get on your state representatives for that. Guys, I appreciate you listening to the Carl Jackson Show podcast today. Again, I'm going to encourage you to please, I know this gets annoying, but follow me on social media, The Carl Jackson Show. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter, True Social, you name it. Wherever social media you're on, I'm probably there. So The Carl Jackson Show. And then also subscribe to my podcast, YouTube.com. Subscribe there. Click the bell so you get the notifications. Rumble, I'm on there. Anywhere podcasts are found, you can go directly to, if you prefer, thecarljacksonpodcast.com or to salempodcastnetwork.com. Guys, until next time, don't grow weary doing good. God bless you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.